Dawn awakes another still Pacific Northwest morning. It's serene, a silence you've waited all week to hear. The grass is only this green when the morning dew is applied, delicately, a brush stroke from the heavens. The fairway is calling you, dear friend, beckoning through the crisp, cool air. You could sneak out for 18 and still make it back in time for your afternoon meetings. Just don't blame us if your buddy's Instagram post off the turn gets you in hot water with your boss. We've got your weekly golf fix right here. The Golf Show, brought to you by Fairway Independent Mortgage of Seattle. Every Thursday morning at 6 on 710 ESPN Seattle. Now here's your host, Sean Crew.
That's right, it is The Golf Show with Sean Crew on 710 ESPN Seattle. Well, we are now in the final week of the 2021-22 PGA Tour season. The tour making its last stop of the season at Eastlake Golf Club. Kind of hard to believe that it was 3 years ago when Tiger Woods made that iconic walk up 18, the sea of fans all around him. It was something that we had not quite seen before, and even Tiger has since said that moment still gives him chills every time he sees it. He's obviously not in the field this week, but he did send a message to players over social media wishing them all the best of luck. All right, so the top 30 players in the FedEx Cup standings all competing. One of the favorites coming into this week, last week's winner at the BMW Championship, Patrick Cantlay. He and Bryson DeChambeau going very low at 27 under before sending the event into a wild six-hole playoff where Cantlay ultimately prevailed. It was his third PGA Tour win of the season. He also became the first player to snag three wins this year. And get this, during his four rounds last week, he also had the best strokes gained putting, 14.58, since it became an official stat in 2014. Okay, so if you watch Patrick Cantlay, he's kind of got this cool, quiet energy about him, so much so that he's recently picked up the name Patty Ice. It sounds like the nickname might be so new that he may have only heard it this past week, but whatever you call him, he's still the guy who's gone head-to-head against Justin Thomas, Jon Rahm, Colin Morikawa, and now Bryson, and beaten all of them this season. Earlier this week, he talked about what's allowed him to go up against some of the best and get the job done.
I think a lot of determination and a lot of focus, and I'm as focused as I can be on every single shot, and I try not to let my mind get past the moment that I'm in, and maybe that's why I come across a little sedated out there, but I'm locked in and I'm as focused as I can be, and then I kind of let the chips fall where they do. I try not to get caught up in being drought driven 45 yards or whatever it is, and I just try and lock in and do my absolute best in that moment. And, my best is pretty good.
His best is pretty good. Not only did Cantlay earn a spot on this year's Ryder Cup team, he starts off today in pole position, ranked number one, with the biggest points advantage in the field. If you want to catch live coverage of the tournament, it is on from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. today on the Golf Channel. All right, so coming up a little later in the show, Tour Insider Ron Mintz is going to be joining to talk more about the Tour Championship. Also later, Golf Channel Steve Burkowski, he's going to help break down the latest at the Korn Ferry Tour Championship, another big event in golf this week. There, you got a lot of players looking to make moves, hoping to qualify for their PGA Tour cards, or if they have already, improve their priority ranking. Northwest Korn Ferry Tour players who've already secured their cards, Medford, Oregon's Dylan Wu, I just had him on the show a few weeks ago, and Surrey, BC's Adam Svensson, he just had a big win at the Nationwide Children's Hospital Championship this past weekend. It was his second win of the season. Okay, so the women, also a big week. The Solheim Cup, it is back. The 2021 event being held at Inverness Golf Club in Toledo, Ohio. 12 of the best U.S. players going up against 12 of the best European players. While Team USA holds a 10-6 lead overall heading into this year's event, they're looking for some redemption after their 2019 loss in Scotland. Practice sessions currently underway through tomorrow. Matches begin on Saturday. Between the Golf Channel and NBC, there's plenty of live coverage on that all day, starting at 5:30 a.m., so if you're up early or staying up late, lots of golf for you. Well, and in the meantime, I'm shuffling some things around today. I'm bringing in Mike Salk a little bit early. Mike, good morning. How are you?
I'm fantastic, Sean. Good to be with you again.
Well, good to have you with me as well. It seems as if there is just a lot going on this week, so much to get into. So let's just dive right in. Hashtag golf, trending story number one. Well, I had not planned on bringing in a story about Bryson, but you just can't quit him these days. The latest news that came out on Tuesday, fans are no longer allowed to yell Brooksy. What did you think about this?
you know, I support Bryson. He makes it hard sometimes, certainly, and he does a lot of sort of dumb things, essentially, and things that I don't necessarily like, but I think this is the right decision to take it out of his hands, to stop allowing him to be the only target. I don't know how much you had a chance to watch over the weekend at the BMW. First of all, it was great. Unbelievable playoff and all of that. But if you read the ESPN article about it, they really made it clear that anything NBC was saying on the broadcast about the crowd getting behind Bryson at times as he was, you know, coming close to shooting a 59 was at best exaggerated and at worst an outright lie. That he was hearing it from the crowd nonstop. Yeah. And while, look, I'm a Northeasterner, I'm pro booing, I'm pro holding people accountable, I don't mind a little heckling, I don't know that we've ever seen one person and one person only have to deal with that level of heckling while no one else, not one of his competitors, has to deal with it at all. And I don't think that's right. I mean, heckling him the moment after he's lost an unbelievable playoff and is walking up the hill to sign his scorecard. He hands his hat to a young fan, and then he's got to listen to some guy screaming, "Nice job, Brooksy," at him. It's just, look, I don't want to just make excuses for him because he doesn't need the excuses made. But why should he have to deal with something that no one else on the entire tour has to deal with because Brooks Koepka decided he didn't like him?
I don't know that he's the only player on tour that's had to deal with this. I mean, there's been a lot of villains in the game and players that people love to hate. Bryson isn't the only one, but he's certainly the one getting the brunt of it now. And, you know, Harry Higgs has been out with him and said that it's a lot. And I love me some Harry Higgs, so if he's saying it, it makes you take a pause. But you've got to believe that it's bigger than what it should be. And what this says to me is that he's a powerful presence on tour and that there are a lot of people who aren't fans, enough so that they're going to heckle him and do exactly what he doesn't want them to do. I also I also don't think that he should be kicking people out. I think this is the way that they avoid that in the future, because he shouldn't have.
Well,
that.
For sure. I think you're right about that, Sean. But I don't know that the people actually don't like him. I think it's like a world wrestling, you know, WWE wrestling type of thing where they see him as the heel. And so it's fun to go down and boo him. It's not that they hate him. It's not that they think he's a jerk or any of those things. I just think it's part of the culture of like, oh, it's like a wrestling heel. And so I'll just go and boo him. And that's part of the fun of the whole thing. But unlike wrestling, which is fake, this is real. And he's out there and I don't. You know, we're seeing these types of situations throughout sports. I don't know if you saw the story, Brock and I talked about it on our podcast this week, about Mets fans or the Mets players giving the thumbs down to their fans when they do something well. Saying, hey, you guys boo us when we screw up. We're going to basically boo you when we do something well. I think what the level of harassment that players deal with today is not what it was 15, 20 years ago, because especially of that direct connection they now have on Twitter, they're able to see the worst of fans and some of the truly awful things people say. And I think it's changed the way they view that relationship.
I 100% agree with that. I think social media certainly has its advantages in terms of the athlete-fan connection, but I also think there's a big downside that's created a monster. So I'll also say that unlike wrestling, we know this bothers Bryson. So I'm going to side on the fact that if I'm on any level a fan, I'm not yelling something at him that would bother him. I'm cheering him on. That's why I think this is coming from people who aren't in his corner. So, okay. Trending story number two. The second round of the FedEx Cup Championships at Caves Valley in Baltimore for the first time in history. New course. There's always an interest in how that course might play. We know the course setup is always going to be more difficult for a PGA Tour event than it is in regular play. But if 27 under, which was the low score for this event, gives any indication, some are saying it might have been too easy. It may not be something that matters during a regular season event, but some are saying, you know, closing out the season, crowning a champion. The question is being asked, should the courses be more challenging during the playoffs? What are your thoughts on this one, Mike?
Well, I mean, look, 27 is a pretty low number. I mean, that's something you're used to seeing at, you know, one of these more second-tier PGA events. So I don't want to sit there and defend it. I do like the idea of different challenges every week. It's something I think NASCAR has always gotten right, where every single week the course setup is different and that gives them, you know, a different challenge. And I think golf has the ability to do a lot of that. I think if one week it's more challenging and one week it's just about, you know, shoot darts and all of that, I think that's fine. But I think 27 under in a playoff event is a bit much. And as a selfish Seattle fan, If I'm seeing scores like that, remind me again why the PGA Tour can't come back to Sahali or some of the other places around here.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Well, absolutely. I was out at Sahali this week at a charity tournament. It's in beautiful shape. It's still incredibly challenging in its own way. Yeah, it's shorter, but if you miss at all, you're in the trees, and then good luck getting out of it. So I think that the one thing that the tour has missed on at times is creating lots of different types of challenges, and I think that that's something that they could absolutely improve on.
I think when you normally think of tough course setups, the first thing you always think about is the U.S. Open. You know, that's where we expect to see a challenge. I love it. I don't know that I want to see it every week, but I enjoy watching the players struggle to make par. When Gary Woodland went 13 under at Pebble Beach a few years ago, I love Pebble, but it should have been harder. I think the playoffs should bring some expected level of challenge. It's fun when a player is on a 59 watch, but I don't think that the second tournament of the series should be one where multiple players are looking at breaking low score records. The weather being part of that factor. Why was the course playing easier? Because they're dealing with weather. And I don't know if you caught it, but Rory McIlroy saying he didn't think there was anywhere to play where heat and humidity wouldn't be a factor except for the Northwest. So that's exactly. Then bring one of those events this way. Sahali, Bandon, Chambers Bay. I mean, I'm sure one of them could figure it out.
Well, that would be obviously my dream. I mean, I really want that to happen. We talk about it a lot. And I think any of those courses would be great for it. I also think what you mentioned there in both Chambers and Bandon is the idea of some links courses. It's just not something, there are links courses around the country. We don't see a lot of them on the PGA Tour. If you watch every week, you see a lot of courses that are similar. And that's not to say they're exactly the same, but as a casual viewer on television, many of them look alike. And I think that's one of the reasons I love the Open Championship, because it generally looks so thoroughly different from everything else we see on tour. And I like that. I wish we could have more of that.
Let's get that campaign going. Get some more
Chambers. Let's go.
Let's do it. All right. Trending story number three. Phil Mickelson came out blasting the USGA this past week. Rumors have been circulating about a potential solution to better manage the distance issue in golf. And as we all know, with the improvement of equipment and technology, players are outplaying the course, and there's just not enough money or land to just lengthen the course as the remedy. So the USGA solution, shortening the driver. So rather than it being a maximum 48 inches, it would be reduced to 46. On Friday, Phil tweeted, quote, "Word is that the USGA is rolling back the driver length to 46 inches. This is pathetic. First, it promotes a shorter, more violent swing, injury prone, doesn't allow for length of arc to create speed. And during our first golf boom in nearly 40 years, our amateur governing body keeps trying to make it less fun." What do you think, Mike Salt? Do you agree with Phil?
Well, I will absolutely defer to Phil on whether or not it promotes that kind of swing. I wouldn't know. My driver's still sitting in my trunk because I refuse to take it out right now because it's been benched because it's been mean to me. So I'll defer to Phil. He's the bomb hitter, and I'm the guy who's lucky to hit it 20 yards at this point with that stupid club. But I think that what they've got to offer is something to hand, because the idea of trying to figure out how to make these courses play shorter is important. Or play longer, I should say. They are outgrowing the courses with the technology, the strength, what they're learning, the strategies of what Bryson and others are doing with the big bombers, etc. And growing out the rough, as Brandel Champlain has talked about, really doesn't work all that well because the stronger hitters, the DeChambeaus of the world, don't mind being in the rough, and the stronger ones are able to get it out of that rough and hack it out. The answer, and again, I'll go back to Brandel because I think he's got this right, is more trees. Make it more punitive, not just rough, but things that you can't just hack your way through. More strategically placed trees on fairways or in places where players are trying to cut over or whatever it is, in order to make the game harder for them to mess up. Yeah, they'll still hit it long ways, but okay, that's fine. We love seeing long drives. Who doesn't like to see a 340-yard bomb? That's incredibly fun for the game. But it's got to be a risk-reward where there's something that is actually punitive for them if they screw it up.
So the USGA, I mean, they've been talking about a solution for years now, and it's always been a dead-end conversation. It's a tour problem. It's not a general public problem. I don't even think it's a majority of golf problem. The only reason why they're finally doing it is in the last year or so, Bryson has made distance an even bigger conversation. So when he's playing courses the way they're not intended, cutting fairways and stuff, I don't think that the tour loves that. And Here's the thing. I also think, what is it, 45 inches is the average length of a tour player's driver. So I'm not even sure that this lengthening issue or a limit to it is a big enough problem. I do think Nicholas has talked about this. Changing the golf ball could be something. But whatever it is, it needs to be something that's easy enough to change that isn't a huge impact to the industry, but also still allows the money to be made. And I look, everybody wants to buy into new equipment, new stuff. So it's a problem. Yep. They got to figure it out. But I do think, unfortunately, it's the tour's problem. I don't think it's the majority of golf's problem.
Well, that's a really good point you make. I certainly don't have that problem in any of the courses I play, but that's why I'm playing from the white. I just think as you watch golf, and I watch a lot of it, it's very infrequent that I see the guy have to chip out, that I see them right have to punch out of the trees because they don't have a shot. It's more that, okay, they hit an errant shot, and oh, now they're just in the rough. And they're so strong and they're so powerful that even being in deep rough, it doesn't affect them the way it does a common golfer. They're able to bring such tremendous swing speed to it that they don't care that much. Obviously, they care, but they're able to fight through it. Can't fight through a tree. You can't fight through it. Right? You can't just power your way through it. Or we get to see something incredible where they thread the needle through a bunch. I want to see more shots like that more than seeing them just hack their way out of the rough.
Well, if they come out this direction in the Pacific Northwest, we have a lot of trees that they can figure out how to navigate through. So
well, that comes back to Sahali once again as a place that would be, I think, an interesting challenge for some of these guys.
Lots of trees there. All right, trending story number four. Last week, Rory McIlroy was asked about how he was feeling heading into the final weeks of the PGA Tour season. His response, quote, "I think there have been a lot of guys right now a little jaded, a little tired. End of the season, there's been a lot of golf and a lot of travel." Well, one thing you've got to give Rory credit for, he usually says exactly how he feels. But it is a long season, especially long this year, with things having been moved around because of COVID. It would have started on September 10th, 2020, and it will end now this Sunday, September 5th. I know this season was an exception, but what do you think, Mike? Is the PGA Tour season too long?
Well, I mean, it's to the point where there almost isn't a PGA Tour season. It's always going, right? I mean, what they've done now with the wraparound portion of the season is it just sort of starts over again the next week. Some of it's in Asia, and there's some charity tournaments, but there's really just not that much time between, you know, the awarding of the FedEx Cup in a couple of weeks, and then getting around back to January when you're once again in Hawaii for the Tournament of Champions. So I understand where Rory's coming from, and I appreciate his candor. I'm certainly not going to kill the guy for it. It's easy to kind of say, well, these guys get to travel in private planes, and it's pretty easy, and he can take 3 weeks off and not play here and there. But at times I've considered what that life must be like, and not necessarily for the Rorys and the top guys in the game who've made the hundreds of millions of dollars, but for everybody else on the tour, the guys who are just, you know, making their living doing this. I'm sure it is challenging, and I'm sure that they don't have great family lives, and unlike the other major sports, they don't have that off season where they can go decompress and just go hang out with their family and actually be part of the rest of their life. So, look, golf is obsessive, obviously, we all understand that, but I don't think it's going to change, and as a fan, I love the fact that there's golf on almost every single weekend when I want to watch it, but I certainly don't blame Rory for having that opinion.
Yeah, so this season, it ends on Sunday. There's 1 week off, and then it'll start back up again on September 16th. You have the Ryder Cup the week after that. The 2021-22 season will run through August 28th. So next year, it'll only be a couple of weeks off. It is a lot of golf, which I think, you know, is great for players, especially the ones who have to earn their way in each week. But some could argue that the nice thing about that is that they're getting more opportunities. And I think that that's not necessarily a bad thing. But I think there is a disadvantage to fans, which I've said a million times. I feel like we need to miss it. I don't feel like we get that opportunity. You know, again, COVID has changed things, but I went to the Seahawks Raiders game in Vegas a few weeks ago. That was amazing. Well, not the result, but the experience. And I've got Husky season football tickets. The first home game is this Saturday. I love the fall for no other reason than football. And I love it because football comes back and I have a chance to miss it and I get to see it again. It just, you don't get that with golf.
I think it's a really good point, and what you're saying is essentially, can golf increase its demand by lowering its supply? that there's too much golf.
A little
there's
bit,
so
yeah.
much of it. It's so readily available to us to watch at any time that you don't get the chance to miss it and make it feel special. I'll disagree with you, although I think it's a good point. I think the fact that the wraparound season, it's not widely viewed by casual fans. No one's getting excited for the, you know, what is it in Korea, the FJ Championship. I mean, you just don't see the same level of excitement or interest or viewership for those tournaments that you do for once the season really starts going, and then, of course, for the majors and the big tournaments. So I don't think for the casual fan that's an issue, maybe for you and me, but I think that I might put it in the super fan category and not the casual fan that the PGA needs to hit.
Well, yeah, but in order to keep these events going, you've got to have eyeballs. You got to have people invested in wanting to go to these tournaments. So there's got to be some level of interest to keep these tournaments going. But in any case, this season will end this Sunday. Any new updates on how you'd rank the season? Think you gave it a 7 or an 8 out of 10?
I think I'm still there. I mean, look, I think the whole Brooks Koepka DeChambeau feud has really, turned eyeballs and conversation towards golf, which is a good thing. Obviously, you know, for me, if Jordan Spieth is doing well, then I'm happy and golf gets 10. And he's really not done very well here for the last couple of weeks.
Spieth, I love it.
He's my favorite athlete, man. If Jordan's doing well, then I'm happy. And he starts, what, 6 shots back here this week. So I'm hoping he can find a way to pull it off, even though it would be challenging. I just think in general it has been a pretty good, maybe not quite perfect, but pretty darn good year for the game. And we've seen a lot of the bigger stars show up at big moments. You know, I the guys that moved the needle were relevant throughout the year. And I think as a golf fan, that's all you can ask for. And oh, by the way, throw in all of these playoffs that we've gotten to see, which have been must watch. And sometimes they've been between unknowns or relative unknowns. And then sometimes they end up being between Patrick Cantlay and Bryson DeChambeau. And even though I had to triple check to make sure that was Cantlay, since he wasn't wearing all black, it was pretty darn cool to see. So I think it's pretty good year for golf.
I got to say that I think for me, it's not just the big players playing well, but I think it's also the younger up-and-comers giving us something to talk about. It's these storybook storylines, the ones that you can't make up. Mickelson winning the PGA, Hideki's Masters win, which is also a big win for Japan. Guys like Mike Vasaki finally playing in his first PGA Tour event. And Patrick Cantlay, regardless of what he's wearing, he was an amazing amateur player, so it's really good to see where he is now. There was a time when if Tiger Woods wasn't in the field, there wasn't anything near the same level of excitement for general fans of this game. So add in all the playoffs this season, and I'm not sure that you can ask for too much better. So, all right, good stuff, Mike Salk. Thank you.
Always. Talk to you next week.
All right, so coming up next, it is the Tour Championship, the final event of the PGA Tour season. Also, the FedEx Cup title, it's up for grabs. Golf Insider Ron Mintz joins me to preview the field and then some. That's next on The Golf Show with Sean Crew on 710 ESPN Seattle. Hi, this is Sean Crew. I'm here to tell you that getting a home loan should not be stressful or difficult, but time and time again, I hear about the struggles potential homeowners go through. This is why I recommend Fairway Independent Mortgage Corporation of Seattle. I've purchased and refinanced with them on multiple occasions, and the process has always been seamless. As a top 10 national retail lender, Fairway has the reputation for getting it done on time and with a high level of customer service, all while delivering great rates and fees. The Fairway Seattle team has decades of experience to help you navigate the competitive Pacific Northwest market and will deliver the strategies needed to help you win. If you're struggling with your current lender, don't waste any more time. Contact the Golf Show's dedicated lending team today at 855-7-FAIRWAY. That's 855-7-FAIRWAY or visit online at fairwayseattle.com.
Fairway Independent Mortgage Corporation, NMLS 2289, is an equal housing opportunity lender. Branch NMLS 1504888. This is not an offer to enter into an agreement. Not all customers will qualify.
The Golf Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Welcome back to The Golf Show with Sean Crew on 710 ESPN Seattle. Well, so much up for grabs this week. The grand prize, $15 million, and the FedEx Cup champion title. Regardless of where these guys come out on Sunday, this event promises to deliver a big payday, the worst you can make. Even finishing last in 30th place is $395,000. But it's more than just money. Getting here, all of these players have now earned a spot in next year's Masters, the U.S. Open, the Open Championship, also entry to the PGA Championship, and a number of other events. Here to talk more about what's on the table this week, Tour Insider Ron Mintz. Ron, it's been a while. Great to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing great. I hope you are.
Well, I am good. It is the Tour Championship, the last event of the season. Kind of hard to believe we're finally here. But the FedEx Cup, it is something that has evolved over the years, and what it is has only continued to improve over time. One of the biggest changes this season is that there will no longer be a separate Tour Championship winner and FedEx Cup champion. In the past, if a player won this tournament, it did not guarantee them winning the FedEx Cup. That has now changed. Whoever wins on Sunday also wins the grand prize. What are your thoughts on this change? Was it the right decision?
I think so. I think in the years past, and this is about the fourth change they've had since 2009, they've tinkered with it before. I'll give you a good example. When Bill Haas won the Tour Championship, I think it was 2011, when he hit a ball out of the water on 18 and won, he had no idea until they went to the trophy ceremony that he had won the FedEx Cup. No clue. And so that it was a little confusing back then. I think this format so much easier to follow, and the players seem to have embraced it more.
Yeah, no, agree. Well, the man of the hour, or perhaps the man of the season, Patrick Cantlay, probably no surprise that he's considered a favorite. Three wins this year, and his putting has been something else. He comes in at the top of the leaderboard with the biggest points advantage. But, Ron, we know that having the lead and keeping the lead are two different stories. How do you see Cantlay doing this week?
Well, I love his chances, especially if the putter is as hot as it was last week. But the thing I worry about, Patrick, and I say this about every winner every week, winning is so exhausting. It takes so much out of you. You don't realize it until it's over and you've done all the media and you get back to your hotel or you get home and you're just physically and mentally drained. He said in his presser Wednesday that he felt pretty good, but he had been exhausted. So that's the only concern I have. But he's been playing incredible. He's the only three-time winner this year, and this is the fourth time in 5 years he'll be at East Lake. So he's definitely the favorite in my mind.
Well, Erik van Rooyen, probably the biggest surprise, but also such a great story. I've become a big fan. In just a matter of weeks, he's shown exactly how you go from being on the outs to very much in. He was ranked 139th just before the playoffs. He is now 27th coming into this week. You look at van Rooyen, and he is just the perfect example of how playing well at the right time can be a huge payoff.
Yeah, I love his attitude. He's always smiling. You know, he won the Barracuda in the regular season. But in the playoffs, he's had two top seven. So that's why he's been able to advance to the final 30. And I think it's, for lack of a better word, maybe the Cinderella story of the Tour Championship.
Well, Bryson DeChambeau, not a Cinderella story, but someone who's creating a lot of stories in this game. It is crazy to me to think how much has changed in just a little more than a year. At one point, we questioned what he was doing early on and if the weight gain, the 20 protein shakes a day power play thing was going to work, and maybe more importantly, for how long. He's since curbed all of that. Like him or not, he continues to prove that he's a force. It doesn't seem like he's going anywhere anytime soon.
No, he's the real deal. He has backed off the protein shakes. He's actually lost, I think, now over 30 pounds. I think 20 of that was when he got COVID. But, yeah, I mean, his game, when he hits it straight, and that's what he did last week, he's unstoppable. He said this week he wasn't too sure about East Lake because it's a course that dampens distance advantage because of the bunkers in front of the green. So that's something he's going to have to overcome when he tried to decide to go for a green or not. I don't think you'll see that as much this week. But, yeah, he's definitely a threat. I mean, him and Patrick both, to me, they were both winners last week. That playoff was just remarkable to me.
Well, you mentioned this, and we were kind of chatting a little bit before the show started, but you had tweeted out about the fact that he hasn't done any press. What are your thoughts about that? I mean, it is his choice, but he played a good event, took it to a playoff. He finished second, not second to last. What do you think about what's going on with him not wanting to do media?
Well, I think you know, he was obviously upset he lost. He stormed off very upset. But I think if he'd have went in the media center, you know, they, when I'm in there, we don't ask tough questions. We're very conscientious of the fact that if we're, you know, ask a player a bad question, he may not talk to us again. Mm-hmm. And they feel the same about us. So I think if he came in there and said it was a great playoff. Congratulations to Patrick, you know, and it would have been fine, but he was just really upset. And this has been going on and off for a few weeks. He did talk to the media when he shot a 60 the week before. So I don't know. I mean, I know Jay Monahan came out and said that he encourages players to all talk to the press, although they're not going to fine anybody for not doing it like tennis does. So we'll just have to see how it plays out. And I don't know if you heard, but they are threatening now to evict fans or ban fans from the course if they yell out Brooksy when Bryson's swinging. So
oh, yeah.
It's gotten that bad.
Yeah, I saw the headlines. And, you know, I appreciate you making that point because I'm usually remote, but also in the media center as well, remotely. That is exactly it. You know, we have a chance to ask the questions, and I think we all know we want those players to come back and have more conversations with us. So I think we're always mindful, especially in a situation where maybe the results aren't what they wanted, being sensitive around that. So I appreciate you making that point. Tour insider Ron Mintz is with me on the Golf Show. All right. Well, so John Rahm, Justin Thomas, Colin Morikawa, Jordan Spieth, Brooks, Bryson, Xander. I mean, so many great players. While there may be favorites, I don't think there's anyone that's actually jumping out as a guarantee. But Ron, out of all the players in the field, who do you think stands to gain the most from winning this FedEx Cup title?
I am really high on Tony Finau. He is second this week, ended a 5-year drought for a victory. He had won, I think, the Barracuda or one of the secondary events. Even though it was a victory, I don't think he felt like, and a lot of fans did, that it was a real tour win. And I've always felt like once he got that victory, the monkey would be off his back. And this is his fifth straight appearance at East Lake. He's playing phenomenal golf. He feels good about his whole game. Putting's always been his nemesis, but he's putting good. So I would not be surprised to see Tony win this week.
All right, Tony Finau, the one player I did not name off in that list. So, all right, Dustin Johnson, reigning FedEx champ, finished T6 at the BMW last week, 15th in the FedEx Cup standings, but also the only player who has made it into the Tour Championship in all 13 seasons that it's existed. I'll be the first to admit that I've gotten very comfortable with Dustin Johnson playing well. But when you think about it, I mean, that's a pretty remarkable accomplishment, especially given all of the young talent that's coming up on the tour lately.
Oh, it is. And he's won, I don't think he's won yet this year, but he has won every year he's been on tour, at least one event. And that's another incredible record. So Dustin's always a threat. He hasn't really set himself apart in the playoffs, but he's been lurking and sort of made a run last week, but fell back. So I would never count Dustin out.
Lastly, the Ryder Cup team. It's starting to really take shape. Patrick Cantlay, the last to earn a spot in. No question, U.S. captain Steve Stricker is going to have some tough decisions to make on his picks. But on the flip side, probably not terrible to have so many great players to choose from.
No, I mean, if you look at the top 20, I think any one of those players could be great contributors to the U.S. Ryder Cup team. And Captain Stricker is going to have a tough decision. I've always wondered how you could go from someone who was, say, 13th in the ranking and jump over them and pick somebody who's 17th. It doesn't seem like it's fair, but as a captain, you've got to pick the player who has the best momentum at the time because these rankings are based over a 2-year period, although they're heavily weighted for the recent play. And Patrick Cantlay jumped up 5 spots after his win last week to secure his spot at number 6. So winning does help. But when I go down the list here, I mean, I don't see a single weak player in the top 20. I really don't.
All right. Well, Ron Mintz, I appreciate you taking the time for me this week. I know that you have been busy. I know you do a lot of shows. So thank you so much.
It's my pleasure. Thank you. Anytime.
Once again, Ron Mintz, you can follow him on Twitter at MINTZGolf. He's always got some really good news, stats, and updates. All right, so coming up next, we've been talking a lot about the Tour Championship, the final event of the PGA Tour season, but there is another tour that is also wrapping up this week. Some might argue that there's a lot more at stake for these players. Golf Channel's Steve Burkowski joins me next on The Golf Show with Sean Crew on 710 ESPN Seattle. Hi, this is Sean Crew. I'm here to tell you that getting a home loan should not be stressful or difficult, but time and time again, I hear about the struggles potential homeowners go through. This is why I recommend Fairway Independent Mortgage Corporation of Seattle.
I've purchased and refinanced with them on multiple occasions, and the process has always been seamless. As a top 10 national retail lender, Fairway has the reputation for getting it done on time and with a high level of customer service, all while delivering great rates and fees. The Fairway Seattle team has decades of experience to help you navigate the competitive Pacific Northwest market and will deliver the strategies needed to help you win. If you're struggling with your current lender, don't waste any more time. Contact the Golf Show's dedicated lending team today at 855-7-FAIRWAY. That's 855-7-FAIRWAY, or visit online at fairwayseattle.com.
Fairway Independent Mortgage Corporation, NMLS 2289, is an equal housing opportunity lender. Branch NMLS 1504888. This is not an offer to enter into an agreement. Not all customers will qualify.
The Golf Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Welcome back to The Golf Show with Sean Crew on 710 ESPN Seattle. Well, by now, you already know it's a big week in golf, and we've been talking a lot about the Tour Championship, but it is also the Korn Ferry Tour Championship, the final stop for a number of players who are looking to gain their PGA Tour status this next season. Here to talk with me about what's unfolding this week, Golf Channel Steve Prakowski. Steve, I know you've had an especially busy travel schedule this week, so I appreciate you taking the time.
John, always a pleasure. Thanks for having me. It's a big one here this week in Indiana, the conclusion of what has been a combined super season that has lasted the better part of 19, 20 months. So we're excited to hand out some PGA Tour cards come Sunday.
Well, Steve, you're a wealth of golf knowledge in general, but you're also a go-to when it comes to the Korn Ferry Tour. I thought it'd be great to have you on to talk a little bit more about what this week means. And for people who may not be familiar, some of who and what we should be looking out for over the next few days. So for starters, it is the Korn Ferry Tour Championship, and it's an opportunity for a number of players to earn their PGA Tour cards. Can you share a little bit more about the significance of this week for the players?
Absolutely, Sean. Normally, in a typical year, and nothing has been typical for any of us the last couple of years, if you will, that players graduate from the Korn Ferry Tour to the PGA Tour. I call it the third best tour in the world behind the PGA Tour and the European Tour. But after COVID sort of hit in 2020, there were no promotions or demotions. Everyone who was on the PGA Tour kept their status. Everyone who was on the Korn Ferry Tour didn't have that chance to move up a year ago. So if you're new to maybe watching the Korn Ferry Tour, for the most part, this is the future of the game. The young, talented kids coming out of college, or maybe the veterans catching a second wind, looking to revitalize their career. So when you get to these three finals, Sean, it's a sprint. You got to get out of the gate. You've got to get a certain amount of points in the fail-safe. The PGA Tour has been using in these three finals or events are about 200 to 210 points. My partner, Craig Perks, the former Players Champ, and the rest of the crew, we're gauging it's probably going to be around 175, 180. What does that mean? If you wrap up a top five finisher better, you have crossed that threshold. You're going to see probably about 10 or 12 more players this week, the final week, have the opportunity to get through. We feel pretty good that the top 8, 9, 10 have already passed that magical threshold. So we're 46 events in, Sean. You got to go back to January of 2020 when Tommy Gainey won in the Bahamas, and this is finally the end of this super season. So the first 43 events, points were accumulated, 25 PGA Tour cards were handed out in Omaha, and then we went to Boise, and then Columbus, Ohio, and then back to Evansville. This is where it culminates, on one of the toughest courses annually the Korn Ferry Tour plays on, Victoria National. You want some pressure, you want some drama, you want some tears of joy and tears of sadness. I'm pretty confident you're going to see that over the next 4 days.
Well, let me just ask you this, because, you know, it seems like it's a very thin line. But if you were to describe the biggest difference between a PGA Tour and Korn Ferry Tour player, what stands out to you?
Boy, that is such a great question. It is such a fine line, Sean. And what I always do this week when I come on, you want reality TV. I can argue that this week in Evansville, Indiana, is the best reality TV you will ever find. It's ever-changing. It is fluid. There's ups, there's downs. But when you look at the players on the PGA Tour, they're obviously the very best in the world. But you know who came off this tour 6, 7 years ago? Justin Thomas. There are others that have become world-class players like Xander Schauffele, an Olympic gold medalist. He played on the Korn Ferry Tour 5, 6 years ago. The John Rahm of the world, or Jordan Spieth. that somehow navigate without having to spend a full season out here getting their PGA Tour card through exemptions. That is few and far between. For the most part, 90 to 95% of the guys you see on tour each and every week cut their teeth out here. There's no more PGA Tour Q School. It's all about the Korn Ferry Tour. But, you know, to circle back to what you said, I mean, the best of the best are special. They're talented. And there are so many great players out here looking to get back to the tour, looking to make the tour for the first time. I look at Scott Gutchewski, the 44-year-old Nebraska Cornhusker, father of four, hasn't been on the PGA Tour, Sean, in a decade. He's battled two serious foot operations over the last 4 or 5 years. He got the job done last week, got through that magical threshold, and he put out on Twitter, "What did I just do? I can't believe it." I'm getting goosebumps talking about it because it's why we're so passionate about covering the Korn Ferry Tour, that Scott maybe would have thought, "I better do something else to provide for my family." Played well in Boise, played well in Columbus. He's headed back to the PGA Tour. So it's storylines like that, that it's maybe not the 23-year-old like Sahith Theegala from Pepperdine, but someone nearly twice his age that's going back to the tour. That's why we truly, truly love this week.
Golf Channel Steve Verkowski is with me on the Golf Show. We're talking about the Korn Ferry Tour Championship, which kicks off this morning at Victoria National Golf Club in Evansville, Indiana. Defending champion, Brandon Wu, he has an opportunity to make history this week. Crazy to think that in the 32-year history of the tour, no one has actually defended the title. How do you feel about Brandon's chances to make it happen?
You know, that's such a great stat, Sean, because we had the opportunity a couple weeks ago in Boise for Stephen Yeager to become the first player. You think about it, 95% of the time on the Korn Ferry Tour in 32 years, if you win, you're going to the PGA Tour. You're never coming back to defend the title. So in this combined season that has made everything so different over the last 20 months, it just doesn't happen. And as, again, my partner Craig Perks loves to say, we wish you all the best. We hope we never see you back out here again. Brandon Wu is one of the most talented players that we had seen in college golf a couple of years ago, helping Stanford win a national title in 2019, had so much success here a year ago. You know, you have to have him on your short list of players to have a great chance to win here this week. But it's always that fine line, Sean, of these guys are chomping at the bit to get to Napa in a couple of weeks to start their PGA Tour careers. You know, keep an eye on Grayson Sigg as well. You know, Brandon Wu can win. Grayson Sigg's trying to catch that golden ticket with the overall points or the finals leader after three events to be fully exempt, to get a spot in the Players' Championship. You know, I love to say you're going to have a champion on Sunday, but you're going to have 8, 9, 10 other winners like Doug Gim 2 years ago or DJ Trahan making a putt or hitting a shot on the 18th hole to earn a PGA Tour card. This finishing stretch at Victoria National, arguably the toughest 4 or 5 holes these guys will see each and every year. So it's just awesome, for lack of a better word. You know, yeah. we've got a big thing going at Eastlake. The FedEx Cup playoff, someone's going to win $15 million. Their lives aren't going to change. If it's Patrick Cantlay or John Rahm or whomever wins, their bank accounts are going to change. Their lives aren't changing at all. Somebody's life is going to change in Evansville, and there are going to be a lot of them. That's where I sort of separate the difference of the PGA Tour is playing for 10 or 20 times as much money. These guys are playing to put food on the table, like Eric Barnes, who is going to try to make a late charge. What did he do during the COVID-19 pandemic? He went to Publix in the middle of the morning, like 3 a.m. in the morning, to stock the shelves, to make some money, and it freed up his afternoons to practice. You know, when golf did resume. That's what this tour is about. Callum Terrence locked up his card last week. He was getting his hotel rooms paid for by generous people, and I saw that on Twitter, so I'm not speaking out of turn. And a guy that became a father for the first time 3 weeks ago went from Omaha to England to Boise to see the birth of his first child. That's what makes this tour so special.
Well, we have a few Northwest players in the field this week. One of them, Eugene Oregon native Scott Harrington, 40 years old. It was a big story when he secured his PGA Tour card in 2019. It was a 16-year-long journey, which included taking some time off in 2018 to support his wife as she battled cancer. Harrington is 172nd in the FedEx Cup rankings. He's trying to keep his PGA Tour card for this next season. Scenarios like this one are tough because you think, Steve, 16 years, I mean, almost want a special exemption for the players that it took that long to get there. I mean, I feel like, can he just stick around for a little bit longer? But in any case, how do you see Harrington doing this week?
You'd like to think the experience from finally making the turn, the tour, can serve him well. I remember that so vividly in Portland 2 years ago with his wife surprising him behind the 18th green to see him finally fulfill a lifelong dream in his late 30s. So that experience of being out there knowing what this moment is about, and you hope it's not a fleeting moment for Scott Harrington to achieve that goal, to sort of reach the summit. Admittedly, he hasn't played that well over the last 12 to 18 months. And that's the thing a lot of these guys run into, Sean, when you sort of get there and you change or you tweak or you adjust or you're in awe of Rory McIlroy and everyone else out there. You have to realize what you have. It was good enough to get there. You don't have to completely reinvent the wheel to stay out there. So I like the experience aspect of Scott Harrington potentially getting back out there. But again, the pressure, every shot. Right now, you've got to find a way to make the cut. And then you need to find a way on Saturday and Sunday to make your way up the leaderboard. But what he did 2 years ago, I can argue, is one of the four or five best things I've ever been a part of on a broadcast to see all those emotions come through. Maybe he'll have the same result here this week in Indiana.
Well, and no doubt there will be some emotion this week. So, Steve, I appreciate you taking the time. Thank you so much.
Sean, always a pleasure.
Once again, Steve Bukowski. If you want to catch Steve or the Korn Ferry Tour Championship, the Golf Channel will have live coverage this morning from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m., same time tomorrow. All right, that'll do it for this week. I want to thank my guests, Steve Bukowski, Ron Mintz, and Mike Salk. Big thanks to you as well for listening. It's the Golf Show with Sean Crew on 710 ESPN Seattle.